Stay tuned for Nightline Africa, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
The U.S. orders an aircraft carrier into the Persian Gulf. Ukraine marks a day of mourning for crash victims, and Israel searches for missing teenagers. I'm Marty Johnson reporting from Washington. The United States has ordered an aircraft carrier into the Persian Gulf in response to the Iraq crisis. A Pentagon spokesman confirmed Secretary of Defense Chuck Hagel gave the order that the USS George H.W. Bush move from the North Arabian Sea to the Gulf Saturday. A spokesman says the move gives President Barack Obama additional flexibility if military operations are needed. A guided missile cruiser and a guided missile destroyer are to accompany the aircraft carrier. Meanwhile, the French news agency reports an Iraqi airstrike hit a convoy of Kurdish forces in eastern Iraq, possibly by mistake, killing six, and mortar fire in central Iraq hit a recruitment center for civilians volunteering to fight the Islamist militants, killing six people. Today is a national day of mourning in Ukraine following the downing of a military transport plane by pro-Russian separatists that killed all 49 people on board the plane. On Ukrainian television, President Petro Poroshenko declared the day of mourning and vowed to punish those responsible, saying the perpetrators will meet with an adequate response. After his comments, a crowd of protesters pelted the Russian embassy in Kiev with bricks, stones, and eggs, and overturned luxury cars parked just outside the complex. Russian officials later condemned the failure of action by Ukrainian police to stop the protest, calling it a violation of Ukraine's international obligations. The Ukrainian Prosecutor General's office said the 40 service members and nine crew members killed early Saturday were downed by rebels shooting down the Ukrainian Air Force plane. Israel's military says it has arrested 80 Palestinians in the West Bank, including members of the militant group Hamas, in an effort to locate three Israeli teenagers. Officials say the teens, including one who holds a U.S. passport, are believed kidnapped Thursday in the West Bank. And Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu says his country is certain who is responsible.
Israel will act in all ways under its province, in all ways under our control, to bring home the three kidnapped teenagers. Israel will act against the kidnappers and their terrorist sponsors and comrades. We will do whatever needs to be done to protect our people, our citizens, our children, and our teenagers from the scourge of terrorism.
The Palestinians say the teens disappeared in an area controlled by Israel and that they are working with Israel in the search for the missing kids. The Italian Coast Guard says it has rescued nearly 300 Syrian migrants from a fishing boat adrift in the Mediterranean Sea. 281 women, men, and children were rescued from the vehicle late Saturday. Officials say some of the Syrians are in poor health. Italy began stepping up patrols for migrants last year after a boat filled with asylum seekers sank just off the coast, killing at least 359 people. Earlier this month, the International Organization for Migration said more than 40,000 migrants had risked crossing the Mediterranean during the first 5 months of 2014. That is close to the total number for all of 2013. Thousands of migrant workers are fleeing Thailand back to Cambodia, fearing that country's military will crack down on illegal workers. Ron Corbin reports for VOA from Bangkok. The Thai government is denied issuing the expulsion order for workers.
Tightened border security following the May 22 military takeover caused an initial movement of migrant workers back home. In recent days, the numbers have risen sharply. International Organization for Migration Asia Pacific spokesman Joe Lowry.
About 75,000 people would have crossed over from Thailand, undocumented Cambodian workers, and then being taken to their home provinces by a combination of army and military trucks and minibuses that we're hiring. Quite a chaotic scene on the border for the last 48 hours.
Thailand estimates there are as many as 4 million migrant workers, with at least 400,000 from Cambodia. All make vital contributions in industry, agriculture and fishing, areas often avoided by Thai workers. Ron Corbin for VOA News, Bangkok, Thailand.
In the World Cup, Costa Rica came from behind, stunning Uruguay 3-1, the biggest World Cup upset of Saturday. Italy topped England 2-1, Colombia overwhelmed Greece 3-0. Colombians were completely excited about that, and the Ivory Coast, 2 goals to defeat Japan. I'm Marty Johnson reporting.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening. It's Sunday, June 15th, and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of the Voice of America. I'm Douglas Mbuga.
And I'm Odette Fraser. Thanks for joining us.
In absence of minimum wage, these workers who are not skilled are exploited more because given the unemployment rate in this country, employers pay anything. And these workers, because they are desperate, they take anything they are offered.
The government of Uganda promises a minimum wage for the country by next year.
Current drug policies are not working. We must now have the courage to change policies that no longer fit reality.
A call for a new approach to tackling drug-related crime in West Africa.
Put your flags up in the sky, in the sky. And we will stand the sand,
show the world where you're from. And the World Cup enters its fourth day in Brazil. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa.
The United Nations has appealed for more than $1 billion to help those hit by 6 months of civil war in South Sudan. Fighting that erupted in December has driven 1.5 million people from their homes, and 7 million were at risk of starvation and disease, and that's according to Toby Lanza, UN Humanitarian Coordinator in South Sudan. Government forces backing President Salva Kiir and soldiers loyal to his sacked deputy, Riek Machar, violated the latest ceasefire signed in May, hours after it took effect, with the continued bloodshed compounding the humanitarian crisis in the world's youngest nation. Lanza said the seasonal rains had set in and conditions for South Sudanese were deteriorating by the day. A UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, a responsible plan for South Sudan, released on Saturday, said that by December, up to 1.5 million people would have been displaced within South Sudan and more than 800,000 would have sought refuge in neighboring countries. Late last week, IGAD states threatened to slap South Sudan's warring sides with sanctions unless they cease all military operations in the conflict, which has sparked fears it could spiral into genocide.
The United Nations Development Programme and the World Health Organization jointly organized a three-day Africa Regional Consultative Meeting in Windhoek, Namibia. The meeting was aimed at increasing the effectiveness of national policy frameworks to respond to the interlinked issues of alcohol misuse, gender-based violence and HIV/AIDS. From Windhoek, Namibia, I spoke with one of the representatives at the meeting, Abubakar Bokari Koroma, who's also the communications coordinator for Sierra Leone's HIV/AIDS Secretariat, about the overall objective of the meeting.
The African Regional Consultative Meeting on these three issues of alcohol abuse or harmful use of alcohol, gender-based violence and HIV is to see how best we'll be able to put together a global initiative agenda to be able to get countries to discuss and make policies where there are none relating to alcohol use, therein supporting HIV prevention, and also to some extent impacting on the gender-based violence that normally goes on in areas where alcohol is being abused.
Why is it important to get all the stakeholders involved in mapping out the way forward in dealing with gender-based violence, alcohol misuse, and living with HIV?
Because when you get more stakeholders together, it's easier for them to be able to work. No one issue, no one disease burden here will be able to carry out all these. And in most countries, you'd observe that, yes, individual disease programs are well catered for, but they've not been able to deal with these related issues as one. Therefore, it is but prudent that stakeholders from various countries working in the various areas are called together to be able to discuss this issue and see how each and every one will be able to mainstream one or the other into their programs to be able to address all three issues in one.
Was a partnership agreement for action reached at the end of the two-day meeting?
Yes, there is an understanding that each country would go back home and see what we'll be able to do. For instance, in Sierra Leone, we're going to call a stakeholders meeting in Sierra Leone to further discuss the issue country-wise and see how best to be able to bring out some of the challenges that we observed whilst in this meeting here. Also, we agreed that in the meantime, whilst we're discussing, we'll be able to now begin to bring in programs to address alcohol in relation to our mainstream program. For instance, in HIV, we'd want to see how best we'd get alcohol among some of the activities that we'll be doing, and for the non-communicable diseases that are going on in Sierra Leone, we'd want to see how best the program will be able to look at tobacco and alcohol and ensure that all these impact into the outcomes of the various programs.
Now, what were some of the recommendations made to increase effective national policy frameworks?
One of it is that for countries that do not have policies or legislation on alcohol, they should endeavor to get one. But also at the international level, we recommend that the UN should work in terms of getting a protocol or some convention that would serve as a guide for countries to be able now use that for advocacy to get some protocols or legislation or policy in individual countries. It is recommended that countries now should be able to interact and exchange in a network, share experiences as to what they've been able to do and how they were able to do whatever they did to be able to reach at a level wherein alcohol abuse will be reduced in countries in their various sub-regions.
Abubakar Bokari Kuruma, the communications coordinator for Sierra Leone's HIV/AIDS Secretariat. I spoke with him from Windhoek, Namibia.
Labour activists are criticising Uganda for failing to establish a minimum wage. The government's labour minister says the country will have one by next year. But within Uganda, the move is controversial, with many saying the focus should be on attracting investment and creating jobs. Hilary Hula has more for VOA from Kampala.
Upon arriving in Geneva, Uganda's delegates to this year's International Labour Organization conference found themselves under attack. Despite decades of debate, Uganda has yet to fix a minimum wage, the ILO pointed out, and the organization demanded the government establish one by next year. Oloka Mesilamu represents the construction industry in Uganda's National Organization of Trade Unions. He says a minimum wage is crucial to prevent rampant exploitation.
What is happening is that in absence of minimum wage, these workers who are not skilled are exploited more. Because given the unemployment rate in this country, employers pay anything. And these workers, because they are desperate, they take anything they are offered.
He argues a minimum wage would make Ugandan workers more productive.
These things have a direct bearing to the performance, the productivity. When workers are poorly paid, they don't perform. So it is important for the economy as well.
The Ugandan government has long been reluctant to fix the minimum wage. This time, the proposed wage for unskilled workers is 75,000 shillings, or around $30 a month. The country's labor minister has agreed to consider it, but only after studying the matter carefully. Pius Bigirimana of the Ministry of Gender, Labor and Social Development warns that acting too hastily could be bad for everyone.
You don't just rush into a minimum wage without studying to look at the employment trends, to look at the cost of living, and the wage trends by profession, by geographical regions. So fixing a minimum wage without regard to all these factors may destabilize our macroeconomic framework and affect employment trends.
Sarah Sewanyana of the Kampala-based Economic Policy Research Center says most proponents of the minimum wage don't truly understand the Ugandan economy, where most jobs are informal and do not pay regular wages. Enacting a minimum wage could cut into formal employment even further, she says, or force employers to find other ways to recoup their costs.
Some of the benefits can be withdrawn, or this guy is going to reduce on the number of people that he's employing and make sure that he overworks this person whom you have already dictated that he has to get the 75,000.
While countries like Kenya and Nigeria do have minimum wages, their private sectors are also better developed than Uganda's, says Sewanyana. Here, the focus should be on employment, she says, even if it is badly paid.
Because our economy, it has been growing, but not creating that kind of employment that one would have loved to see. Why can't we just focus first on transforming our economies so that the economy can create jobs, and then maybe later on, we can start the discussion of the minimum wage.
Uganda's labor minister has promised to enact a minimum wage by July 2015. In the meantime, says Meselamu, the labor unions are pushing hard to ensure that such promises are kept. Hilary Hewler for VOA News, Kampala.
Dr. Tegegni Wergetu has worked at the United Nations for decades. The Ethiopian-born diplomat's resume includes experience in academia, government, and the private sector. In March of 2013, Dr. Tegegni Wergetu was appointed to the post of Under-Secretary General for General Assembly Affairs and Conference. He's one of a handful of Africans to have held that position in the UN system. VOA's Ashanafi Abeji asked Under-Secretary General Tegegni Wergetu to assess his first year in office.
As successful, I just finished my 10-month report to Secretary General. Seems to be happy. I had six priorities. Make sure that the 6-day session of General Assembly has gone very well. Also programming, reorganizing the department, advancing and promoting integrated global management and global work sharing with the offices in Geneva, New York, Nairobi, and Vienna. I also accelerated implementing technological innovation and team building and management, and also looked into the welfare, productivity, and team building of the workers. So overall, it was very challenging, but I think I managed to do very well.
Was public service something you dreamed of growing up, or was it a role you just happened to stumble into?
I don't think I stumbled into it, but it is not something I pre-planned also. It is something I grew into it, you know, progressively when you get trained in development administration, when you get engaged into development and management skills and training, and then practically using them progressively, I started getting attracted to it, and I started also getting better and better given the opportunity and also trying different venues. So both in academics and also in international organization and government, I managed to get exposure that progressively attracted me. So it is something that is progressively built, and then the more one succeeds and improves, the more it gets attracted. So rather than stumbling, I grew into it.
The United Nations, of course, is the world's premier deliberative body on international issues. As an African, what does your holding of one of the top positions in the UN mean for the continent, for Africa?
It is one of the undersecretarial jobs that's provided for Africa, and then as an African, I feel very proud that I was given this chance, and I have the double responsibility as an African to make sure that I succeed in this. Also, it shows that Africans are quite capable in competing and being able to do this kind of jobs, and the more opportunity has to be opened up for more Africans, and Africans should feel free and strong to compete for it and be able to do it. So I see it that way, and I see a double responsibility in my part to make sure there won't be any disappointment and I succeed in the name of Africans and then open up other opportunities for other Africans. So as an African, I feel very proud, I feel responsible, and I feel also that I must do my level best to succeed.
Many people have this stereotype of UN officials as people who live cushioned lives and rather detached from the realities of the world. Unfair portrayal?
Yeah, I think it is a very totally unfair protocol. The UN is not a monolithic organization. It's been there for 68 years. It started in 1945 with 51 members. It has 193 members now, and it has structural limitations. The UN as a stage and the UN as an actor are two different things. Everything depends on member states. But the UN is very complex, tremendous number in complex organizations like UN Development Agencies, UNICEF, UNFPA, WFP, UNCTA, WHO, FAO, all this. So one has to look at them in a very complex way as opposed to a very restricted, stereotypic way. Also, at the same time, you know, the UN staff, quite a large number of UN staff die on action as opposed to living in peace in Afghanistan, in Syria, in Iraq. We have quite a number of staff that have been working there in Congo, in Central Africa Republic, currently in areas where the Arab Springs, and historically in South Africa. The UN has played a very critical role, and quite a large number of people have sacrificed not only their lives, but also their youth, their energy, and many years of service. So to reach that kind of a conclusion will be unfair. But at the same time, it does not mean the UN doesn't have its weaknesses. It has its own bureaucratic weaknesses, because to move from 1945, work on 68 years, so there is a wear and tear in the process. So maybe that should be taken out of town. But the UN is the world's only truly universal institution.
UN Undersecretary General Tagegni Wergetu, he spoke from New York with VOA's Ashenafi Abeji.
The West African Commission on Drugs says the region needs a new approach to tackling drug-related crime. The commission, which released its findings Thursday in Dakar after nearly 2 years of research, says countries should not criminalize drug use or militarize the approach to traffickers. VOA's Anne Luke has more.
Over the past decade, West African countries have made headlines, seizing tons of narcotics at their coastlines and airports. Thousands of arrests have been made. While it looks impressive on paper, it's not enough. Most of those going to prison are addicts or small-time dealers, couriers, and middlemen. The trafficking and use of drugs like cocaine and heroin continue to climb. Labs producing amphetamine-type stimulants like meth have cropped up in the region. In addition, drug money can buy elections and destabilize governments. Organized crime and extremist groups are getting in on the action. Those are among the findings of the West Africa Commission on Drugs, created by former UN Secretary General Kofi Annan, a native of Ghana.
Current drug policies are not working. We must now have the courage to change policies that no longer fit reality.
Nigeria's Drug Law Enforcement Agency says between 1990 and 2013, it seized 178 tons of cocaine. It sounds impressive, but ex-Nigerian President Olusegun Obasanjo put those numbers in perspective.
Just 1 ton of cocaine that reaches Europe via West Africa is worth more than the security budget of many of our countries.
Mr. Obasanjo led the commission during its investigation. He said all that trafficking has also meant more drug use in the region.
Our region is simply not ready or adequately equipped to deal with the spread of drug use and dependency. The response all too often is to stigmatize and penalize drug users. However, pushing them to the fringes of society or locking them up in ever-increasing numbers will not solve the problem.
The commission says countries should decriminalize taking drugs and the possession of small amounts of them for personal use. It says drug use should be treated as a public health problem, and the focus should be on things like opening treatment centers. That's a stark contrast to the so-called prohibitionist approach that has characterized the now decades-long war on drugs in the Americas. Some experts say that war has failed. The violence only intensified, and drugs did not become less available. The commission says West Africa has a chance to avoid those mistakes. Guatemala's Foreign Affairs Minister Fernando Carrara says the commission's recommendations for West Africa are in line with evolving thinking in his region.
The fact is that prohibition has failed. Regulation is the new word. We need to work on interdiction, but in a different way. Interdiction, as usual, is not enough, is not doing enough. We need to work on public health. We need to work on better social services. We need to work on economic opportunities for the poor.
He, like Mr. Obasanjo, says law enforcement should go after high-level targets, the so-called big fish. That takes political will and specialized coordinated units dealing with narcotics, money laundering, and corruption. Anne Look, VOA News, Dakar.
Hi, this is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports. Visit VOAfootball.com for live updates on the World Cup in Brazil. The site is optimized for your mobile phone or tablet and will bring you the latest scores, stats, photos, and videos. And everything can be shared with your friends from your mobile device to Facebook and Twitter. World Cup nonstop at VOAfootball.com.
Hello, I'm Kim Lewis.
And I'm Yehias Wahib.
Together we host the Voice of America's informative program, Africa News Tonight.
We present a thorough summary of the day's events, featuring interviews with newsmakers in Africa and the world.
Also, Sonny Young drops in live with sports, and we have features on science, health, and business.
Tune in Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC right here on The Voice of America.
Hello, I am Shaka Sali. Join me on Straight Talk Africa every Wednesday as we discuss topics of special interest to Africans, including politics, economic development, press freedom, health, social issues, and conflict resolution. Take your pick. Watch on television, log on to the internet, or listen right here on the radio.
Hello, I'm Douglas Simpoga. Join me for Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll take an in-depth look at an African news topic important to you. We'll have African journalists and expert guests share their ideas on the topic at hand. So, please plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on The Voice of America.
Love African music?
Music time in Africa.
This is Heather Maxwell, and if you do, Music Time in Africa is the perfect show for you. Tune in to listen on the radio Saturdays and Sundays at 0900, 2000, and 2100 UTC. You can also listen to the show day or night on the internet. Go to voanews.com and voaafrica.com and click on Music Time in Africa. You'll find past and present radio shows and a link to my blog, African Music Treasures. This is Africa through its own music. Oldies, classics, traditional music, Afropop, and fusion. You get it all right here in one beautiful bundle on VOA's Music Time in Africa.
We'll be right back.
This is the Voice of America, and you're listening to Nightline Africa.
And still ahead, sports with Segun Adeyemi from the Nigerian commercial capital Lagos, and music from our collection of African music.
And that will be followed by a commentary by Dr. James Joner, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs.
Now it's time for Nightline Africa Sports, and for that, let's go straight to Lagos, Nigeria, and join Segun on the dot Adeyemi. Good evening, Segun.
Good evening, Douglas, and good evening, Africa. Welcome to Nightline Africa Sports for Sunday, June 15th.
Put your flags up in the sky, in the sky. And we will send the sand, send the sand. Show the world where you're from, show where you're from.
Far from being qualified, that is the message from the coach of Ivory Coast, Sabri Lamouchi, to his players, following the celebrations that greeted his team's 2-1 victory over Japan in their opening Group C match on Saturday at the ongoing 2014 FIFA World Cup in Brazil. Speaking at the post-match press conference, the coach said, "We only won one match. We have another tough game ahead against the leaders of the group. We will have to prepare." He asked his players not to get carried away by the victory over Japan. Despite the coach's admonition, the Ivorian players, and indeed all of Africa, are celebrating the Elephants' victory, the first by an African team since the tournament started on Thursday. The first African team to taste action in Brazil, that is Cameroon, lost 1-0 to Mexico in their opening Group A match on Friday in Natal. But about 24 hours later, the Ivorians gave Africa reason to celebrate. Headers by Wilfried Bony and Jovinho just 98 seconds apart secured all the 3 points for Ivory Coast after Japan star player Keisuke Honda put his country ahead with an impressive strike in the 16th minute. The Elephants left captain Didier Drogba out of the starting lineup, but his arrival off the bench after an hour coincided with the African nation finally converting its chances, although the former Chelsea striker was not involved in either goal. Drogba, who is 36 years old, started for Ivory Coast in the last two World Cups, but neither of those sides made it out of the group stage. He probably lacks the fitness to play 90 minutes these days, but his impact as a substitute can be dramatic, as was shown on a rainy night in Recife. Bony equalized in the 65th minute with a glancing header before former Arsenal forward Jovinho beat Eiji Kawashima all too easily at his near post to stun the Japanese. Now, the Ivory Coast is in good shape to advance to the second round for the first time. Next up is Colombia, the group leader by virtue of goal difference. The match is Thursday, as is Japan's next game against Greece. Earlier on Friday, Cameroon failed to notch up Africa's first victory, losing by a lone goal to Mexico. The victory carried Mexico into second place in Group A, level on points with Brazil. Oribe Peralta's goal came just after the hour mark, capping an impressive performance from a Mexican side that dominated from the start. Two goals from Mexico were disallowed in controversial circumstances during the match, which was played largely in a driving rain. The loss leaves Cameroon needing a victory over Croatia before facing Brazil. Two other African teams will be in action on Monday. Nigeria's Super Eagles will go against Iran in the second Group F match, while Ghana will take on the United States in Group G. On Tuesday, the fifth African team, Algeria, will test action when it takes on Belgium in Group H. Talking about the Super Eagles of Nigeria, a Nigerian parliamentarian has expressed confidence that the team will advance to the second round. Ogbonna Nwuke also expressed confidence in coach Stephen Ketch's ability to field the right players.
For me, too early in the day to write off Nigeria. We're in a group with Iran, Bosnia, Argentina. And my feeling clearly is Nigeria and Argentina will go through that group. And we can talk about the rest later. I think it is the business of a coach to choose his players. Players that will play according to instruction. And I think the coach has done what he should do. But I think once you have gotten a technical advisor, the mandate of who to play, how to play the person is his own. You know, if he wins, he takes the glory. If he fails, it's his cup of tea. We are giving Keshi a job. Let's allow him to the job.
That was Nigerian parliamentarian Ugonna Nwoke speaking on Nigeria's team to the ongoing FIFA World Cup in Brazil. Many thanks to reporter Tony Tamunu in Port Harcourt for the audio. In other World Cup news, World Soccer's governing body, FIFA, may conduct an investigation to explain why hundreds of seats were mysteriously empty at the Netherlands' 5-1 victory over Spain. Clusters of unoccupied seats were visible at the venue of the game on Friday, despite the game being one of the World Cup's most anticipated of the group stage and featuring the two finalists from the 2010 tournament. According to FIFA, the game had been completely sold out months in advance. Horrific traffic could be blamed for the no-shows. It began as early as 11 a.m. local time, a full 5 hours before the match. Another explanation for the empty seats could be that an official World Cup sponsor accepted his full allocation of complimentary tickets, but chose not to use them. But it is unlikely that sponsors could be responsible for all of the empty seats, given the way that the blank seats were scattered around the stadium. In more news from Brazil, the England's team physiotherapist, Gary Lewin, suffered the World Cup's weirdest injury on Saturday. While celebrating a goal, he sustained a dislocated ankle that caused him to be ruled out for the rest of the tournament. Lewin reacted with delight, limping into the air and pumping his fist when Daniel Sturridge scored for England 37 minutes into its 2-1 loss to Italy in Group D. However, his actions ended disastrously as Lewin came down on top of a stray water bottle and rolled his ankle so severely that it popped out of its socket. The physiotherapist is expected to return to the United Kingdom within the next few days and will be replaced by Steve Kemp. England next faces Uruguay on June 19th in a match that could decide his fate at the tournament. The 50-year-old Lewin was a doctor for English Premier League club Arsenal for 22 years before switching to take the England job full-time in 2008. Back here in Africa, Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta on Friday honored his pledge to sponsor the national football team, the Harambee Stars, to travel to Brazil to watch the ongoing World Cup finals. Kenya has never qualified for the world's greatest football showcase, but President Kenyatta said the trip would provide the players with the inspiration to fight and qualify for the 2018 finals in Russia. 18 players and 4 officials were expected to make the trip today, Sunday. President Kenyatta had made the sponsorship pledge to the team after it won the regional CECAFA Senior Challenge Cup tournament last December. The president said he and his wife will sponsor the team to the tune of $120,000. He says East African breweries chipped in $40,000. Finally, let's now give a rundown of all the results of matches so far played at the ongoing FIFA World Cup finals in Brazil. Group A, host Brazil 3, Croatia 1, Mexico 1, Cameroon 0. Group B, Spain 1, the Netherlands 5, Chile 3, Australia 1. Group C, Colombia 3, Greece 0, Ivory Coast 2, Japan 1. And Group D, Uruguay 1, Costa Rica 3, England 1, Italy 2. That ends it for this weekend's edition of Nightline Africa Sports. Thanks a lot for listening. I'm Segun Adeyemi in Lagos. Now sending it back to Douglas the Mighty Mpuga in Washington.
Thank you, Segun. Segun on the dot Adeyemi will be back again next Sunday for another look at Africa Sports right here on Nightline Africa.
It's Sunday on Nightline Africa and time for music from the continent. So sit back, relax and enjoy.
Lelo makambo lobi makambo na lembie lelo lobby tumba lobby kosona ena baye na boy ko baby sanzoto na matanga na lembie Mario na lembie Mario na baye
oh Mario nasi na peki sayo kulinga kapesi bazai na mbongo Yoka ndenge azaliko kabayo Na mitema ya basipe na mibali Yo moto zena ba diplome mitano Mario Sala kameme foro luka mosala Mario Pona nini ozako baby saka usambu sa kombo nobo Mario Ah, nalembi
Ba protinga na pakolaka Zoto ekoma sembe sembe Oko pete nga na zoka Lobi na swa maladi ya kanser Lobi tango na kopola yo Kimi ganye Mario na baye, Mario na lembie.
Ba familia Mario bakanisaka, Mario apesaka nga mosoro, nzoka nga moto na lakisaka, ye na lisaka, ye na lalisaka, Mario na lembie.
Epa izuwa ya biloko
Nakuta kinga na yangoi
Ikambo moke mosala kobo ma
biloko ya ndako
Na somba Na lembie Mario na baye yo Kene Mario na lembio
Mario Okutinga na biloko mombali mosusu a somba Ya kofanga te Mario Oyoko ilingite olia na mesa Kaka soki zue kangyo na poitrine Oliaga kopeta ngai nako boma biloko Mario, sinasali sayo mingi Diploma si mangamu na sali saki yo Mario Bongo leonga kumimo si mabe Mario likambote Ah, mokilie, ezaka kapoye
Mobali akutinga na bomengo asengi ya komandenga na nimi Mobali akutinga na bangenge asengi ya dirijenga na nimi Na bandiko bimana ye,
babandiko penga ye, monsieur
Mario abimbi moto,
akanisi biloko na ngai ya ye
Mario na baye yo Kende Mario na
Tangwa kola la beto mokuse makolo mila I Mario Mario na lembi Somba beto na baye Mario na lembi
Koyoka motema pasite Na konga mokona futaka Ila mana sombela yo Na tikeli yo souvenir ya bolingo Salina la vache, na cotine de la yon abato. Mario, na lembio. Kende na yon abaye yo.
Mario. Mario. Mario Mosala Kopete Nga Bana Di Koko Banango Ya Yo Olingo Beba Mama Mobokoli
Epa izuwa ya lokuta, epa izuwa ya biloko
Akuta kinga na yango
Ikambo moke mosala kobo mabiloko ya nako Era somba Na baye yo Mario na lembio Bima bima na baye yo
Mario na lembongo alike lemba Mitutuku
c'est des sons non non. Naïbi si Mario me commence à topima, tout nous sa promenade. Tokumi Nanzela Mario Binangai, yo zonga côté nazali, na kumba fatune, koba mona bingamu na sombeli yango. Naïbi si Mario te, nga fina na poso na kumba po eloko na sombi sika, bato spa mona bingamu na sombi. To weli volanga na Mario, Mario, a tout ringa fatune nanzete.
Zoto e salina no ya meme olingi yo baby sanga elongi. Signor Sosua Camosala, come mi savango di lunghi, che panna nesto pe la lembio. Mario papa la paie io, che nena io na lembio.
Sur ma dame en pommade, oh, à tes amouines et à montagne, à l'inga koba la basi à âge naïete, à l'inga obéba maman mobo koli, Mario. Mario, valise zana ete. Soki mama moboko ya bengani ye. Akanga kobe bilongo na liputa e. Babro sada, masini ya mandepu. Kisanola, kut.
Nabandiko bimanaye, babandiko benga ye, monsieur. Mopale a bimbi moto, akanisi biloko nanga ye, ye. Mopale a kutinga nangenge, asengi ato mandenga nandimi. Nabandiko bimanaye, babandiko benga ye, monsieur. Mario a bimbi moto, akanisi biloko nanga ye, ye. Mario, nabaye yo.
Yayo.
Bima na yo na le miyo. Mema bila mana baye yo.
Mario, a travers yo. Na pesa baliki mousu sutoli.
And that was our Sunday music spot. Hope you enjoyed the music from Nightline Africa here at the English service of the Voice of America.
Now let's take a closer look at Africa. One man's point of view, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Secretary General for Political Affairs. Here is Dr. Jonah.
Good evening, Africa. There have been rumblings in the West African landlocked country, Burkina Faso, recently about the possibility that President Blaise Compaoré might seek to change the country's constitution to allow himself to continue in office. The president himself has not said anything about the prospects, but observers in Ouagadougou, the nation's capital, are certain that plans are being laid for this purpose. It would be regrettable if indeed President Compaoré seeks to continue in office at the end of his current term. Except for a few countries in the continent, such as Cameroon, Zimbabwe, Uganda, and Rwanda, the two-term limit is respected. It is necessary to note that President Compaoré has been in office since 1987 when his close colleague, Captain Thomas Sankara, a darling of many African youth, was overthrown and killed in a coup led by Blaise Compaoré. It was President Compaoré that introduced multi-party system in Burkina Faso, renamed from Upper Volta and meaning the country of honest men. It is amazing how President Compaoré has been able to overcome many difficulties. He was accused of being involved in the destabilization process in the West African sub-region in the 1990s. Initially, it was alleged that he was in alliance with Mr. Charles Taylor of Liberia in promoting in civil conflicts in Liberia and Sierra Leone. In exchange for diamonds, it was alleged that he facilitated the transfer of arms and weapons from Libya under Colonel Gaddafi to Sierra Leone. Yet, the International Criminal Court, ICC, has not been able to collect enough evidence to indict him. President Compaoré has also been involved in a serious dispute with former President Laurent Gbagbo of La Côte d'Ivoire at the time of a civil conflict in the country. President Compaoré was defending Burkinabés who were then living in La Côte d'Ivoire. In recent years, President Compaoré has become a statesman of sorts in the continent. He is participating in many efforts to resolve conflict, and he has been a host to numerous international conferences and meetings. Now, if President Compaoré has been so successful in burnishing his image, one wonders why he wants to change the country's constitution and thereby tarnish his image. Commentators have often failed to probe deeply as to why presidents want to stay long in office. The real problem is many hangers-on of presidents in the continent in an attempt to protect their own jobs have often convinced presidents that they are indispensable and should stay in office to protect the nation. Now, the task is that these hangers-on who are unelected should be exposed and made clear that they could not continue this kind of game. This is why it is important that appeals be made to President Blaise Compaoré not to consider changing the constitution. I thank you.
That was a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former Undersecretary General for Political Affairs.
Nightline Africa comes to you from the English service of the Voice of America.
Thanks for joining us tonight. Hope you enjoyed the program. And as you know by now, we are on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. I'm Douglas Mpoga.
Join us again on Saturday. I'm Odette Frazier. Have a good evening.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. Sudanese government leaders and opposition parties will soon begin a long-awaited national dialogue aimed at reaching consensus on addressing major issues facing the troubled East African nation. President Omar Hassan al-Bashir called for the effort, in which to discuss economic and political reform and revitalizing national identity. In a nation torn by conflicts in Darfur and southern Kordofan and Blue Nile states, where millions have been displaced by violence, drought, and food insecurity, and an economy in tatters, this is a hopeful sign. The United States, along with the United Kingdom and Norway, welcome the move. We have long shared the view that a sustainable peace and prosperous Sudan can only be achieved through a fundamental review and reform of national governance there, which now concentrates power at the center and marginalizes the regions. But as history has demonstrated, a dialogue that involves voices only from Khartoum or from traditional political parties cannot yield the results that the people of Sudan demand. Doubting the outcome, some key factions are reluctant to participate. The political leadership must ensure the time and space needed to deliver on their promises of a genuine and truly inclusive dialogue that will include the armed and unarmed opposition as well as civil society. Unfortunately, the government of Sudan has taken actions of late that have enabled some to raise doubts about the sincerity of this initiative. Most notably, the government continues to wage a war and target civilians in southern Kordofan and Blue Nile, and bears primary responsibility for intensifying the conflict in Darfur. As fighting continues to flare in different parts of the country, tangible steps must be taken by all parties to bring these conflicts to an end if there is to be a popular confidence in the dialogue process. Similarly, the government's continued repression of individual, political, and press freedoms limits the space needed for an effective discussion of the challenges facing the nation. Such a process will demand both goodwill and a conducive environment if it is to enjoy broad legitimacy. We will continue to follow the developments closely and stand ready to work with those in Sudan who seek to advance meaningful reforms.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, www.voanews.com/editorials.